Michelangelo once said, "The greatest danger for most of us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but that it's too low and we reach it." Welcome to Life Talk with Jesse Meester. As an international actor, entrepreneur, and world traveler with millions of followers, Jesse seeks to speak and learn from the most insightful, successful people in the world, sharing love and life together. This is Life Talk, and this is your host, Jesse Meester.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Life Talk. Yes, long-awaited and highly requested, Elliot Holz, the one and only, he found time to come on another episode of Life Talk. I'm so excited that you found some time to get on. A lot of people have been requesting to see how you've been doing, where are you now in your life, and a lot of other topics to touch on. How have you been? And welcome.
I'm doing all right, man. Like I said, since the last time we met, I now live in rural Florida. So we got 42 acres out here and planting some fruit trees, getting some livestock, and kind of living the homesteading off the grid natural lifestyle. We're homeschooling our kids now and trying to be self-sufficient.
That's amazing. Elliot and I spoke a little bit off topic off the podcast just now, and I told him that I'm also trying to do the same in Spain right now. So I'm looking at like a bunch of land to get out there and be self-sufficient as well. I think that's, especially in the world we live in, the way to go right now. What else have you been up to? Like, have you, I see you've been bulking, got into the weightlifting again. What else has been going on in your life? I'm very happy to see you again.
Well, yeah. So I decided to do a master's strongman show. I'm 42 years old now. So that qualifies me to train and compete against the old guys. And so I must have put on about 40 pounds since you last saw me. Went a little overboard. And so now I'm cutting back a little bit now. So I'll probably drop another 10, 15 pounds over the course of the next few months before I compete. And just try to be in good shape, but also really, really strong.
Although, do you still do fasting?
I'm fasting today, and today's the first day I'm fasting in probably a year and a half. So when you saw me, it was last year. I probably was just coming out of my fasting season when I spent like a whole year fasting and, on and off. And then I decided to bulk up when 2020 came around, and now, kind of going full circle. That's kind of how I live my life, right? Like, I go in phases.
Yeah. Well, you look great, man. Love the bulk on you. And I'm actually doing a fast myself. A lot of, I don't know, people that are listening, I wrote a book on intermittent fasting and psychology and the practical formats of it. And I think there is a lot of great benefits associated with it. And I wanted to ask you, do you also believe with intermittent fasting that there is a way to bulk up that way through fasting?
No, otherwise I would have tried it. The reason why I stopped fasting is because I was bulking. Like, you got to eat if you want to gain weight. Now you can still, I have pretty good genetics, so I can still build muscle and look lean and have a nice build with intermittent fasting. But to withstand the workouts of a professional strongman, you can't do it. It's just unsustainable. You'll break apart. You have to tailor the meal plan to the energy expenditure required for the sport, right? So although there may be, maybe you can fast, you could legitimately get away with maybe fasting on the days you're not training or on your days off or on the weekend or something like that. I mean, you could do that. But you're never going to get the power output that's required if you're fasting and trying to bulk, build muscle, get more powerful and explosive at the same time.
Yeah, I think I'm not a strong man. I'm just like into fitness. I'm quite lean myself. And I've noticed with the energy and the test and the hormones that increase, I was actually able to like build some muscle, but I hear what you say. And I wonder, do you feel better, less lean, or do you feel better now? Because for me personally, I feel just healthier spiritually and energetically, like being lean and kind of like, you know, integrating the fasting for longer periods of time. Like, what do you feel about this?
I agree. I feel the same way. When I was fasting, I felt healthier and more integrated and clearer minded and not as addicted, right? Because food is kind of like an addiction. You know, then the problem with it is that you're always thinking about, you're either eating or thinking about eating, right? When you're fasting, it's like, well, I'm not going to eat, so I'm not going to think about it. And it frees up so much. I see both as having its pros and cons. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it really depends on what you want. And so when I wanted to go through a spiritual cleansing season in my life, well, I just stopped eating. And when I wanted to, right, I wanted to start lifting heavy stones again, I set some goals for myself, right, to lift a 300 pound stone and a 300 pound log. And I just lifted 600 pounds. I set some goals for myself, maybe just for fun, right? Like, you know, I'm just getting a kick out of life. And as a result, I have to be more worldly, right? I can't be so spiritual. There ain't too many spiritual guys deadlifting 600 pounds, right? Because they're transcending, right? They're transcending the body, right? But if I want to deadlift 600 pounds, I better come right back into the body, fill it up, and then go, you know?
I hear you. Yeah, I have a lot of friends and people in my company say, like, Jesse, you look better when you wear bulky, man. You wear better with a few more kilos on you. I'm like, I'm sorry, bro, but I just feel better this way. Like, I'm going to keep lean, you know, like I'm not a strong, like I said, a strong man. So, I mean, I just do what I feel good with, man. But what is your thoughts on veganism? Like a lot of
veganism?
Yeah. Like people that are now there's this big community in the fitness industry that's saying, like, you know, go vegan and have more energy, build muscle, feel better. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not convinced. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's true. My opinion is that even vegetarianism or you know, where they eat eggs and some fish, I think is better than eating pure animal. I mean, pure plant, right? With absolutely no animal byproduct whatsoever. And if you look at the work of Weston A. Price, who studied indigenous people, right, traditional cultures throughout the world in the 1930s, you know, 1920s, 1930s. He was a dentist. He was a wealthy dentist and a scientist. And a strange thing started happening with his patients right around, you know, when we went into the world wars and the food started changing. We started changing the food towards the beginning of the 20th century, right? Early 1900s. Prior to that, he noticed that most people had straight teeth. They had straight teeth, they had wide sweeping palates, solid bone structure in the head. And then when the diet started changing and we started using more vegetable oils, we started using less meat, we were doing more of a processed food diet, we're eating a lot less vitamin A, vitamin D, and these fat soluble vitamins that are only found in meat. Meat. Basically, this was when they switched from butter to canola oil, right? When that switch started happening, he didn't know why. First of all, he wasn't privy to it was the diet. He had a hypothesis that it was the diet. But what he started to notice was his patients were coming in with shorter palates and crowded teeth. And he surmised, he's like, the bony structure of the children of this new generation is not up to par. And he was like, so dumbfounded by it. He's like, why are the children walking around? Why braces weren't a thing. Did you know that? There was nobody needed braces in the 1800s. It just wasn't a thing. Yeah. It was brand new for him in the 1900s. And he wanted to figure out why. He was like, what is going on? So he then started studying indigenous people throughout the world. He was a nutritionist too, to see what they were eating. Cause his hypothesis then was that it's this shift in the way we're eating away from meat and animal products to industrial foods that come from vegetable oils, seed oils, things of this nature. So he noticed in all of these traditional societies that were untouched by what he called white man's foods. He says that first of all, they all had wide sweeping palates, big strong, thick skulls, heads, no braces, no teeth, no crowding of the teeth, no dental maladies. And so he wanted to know what was the common denominator between all of these tribes that allowed all these people allowed them to have such powerful bone structure in their skulls. Vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin K, what he used to call the X factor, only found in animal meat, animal fat. It was really what it was. He found all these things that were available in animal fat, butter, milk, unprocessed milk. And he said that these people, seafood, he said that these people, especially when they were in parts of the world where meat wasn't plentiful, he says they almost treated like seafood or like foods that were hard for them to get as sacred foods, because they recognized, you know, according to the industrial, the indigenous people he studied, he said that he learned from them that the women and the children had to have these sacred foods. They had to have butter. Butter was a sacred food in some parts of the world. And then fish oils was a sacred food in certain parts of the world where they couldn't get meat. And he said that they explained to him that if the pregnant women and the nursing children took these oils, fats, animal fats into their body, that they would live longer, they would be stronger, and they'd have healthier bone structure. The indigenous people understood this. They knew this. So they treated these foods with great reverence. One thing he could not find, no matter how hard he tried, and the guy traveled the world. You could look at the Weston A. Price Foundation and you could read his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. He could not find a healthy vegan society. Every vegan society, he said, according to him, right? He said that the vegan societies were the most barbarous. The people were the most aggressive and angry. He says they were the least healthy. They had the most maladies and sicknesses and ailments of such. And even the ones that leaned heavily vegetarian but weren't totally vegan were a bit healthier because they were eating like insects. He said, found that like some of these people, they didn't have meat, they didn't have access to meat, but they would eat insects and like small, I guess like small animals, like, you know, lizards and rodents and rats. They didn't have like cattle and stuff like that. He said even those people were healthier than the ones that had zero vitamin A, D, and K. So he's a scientist. Way before scientism, which is the religion of science today, which has the CDC telling you that you need to wear a mask, but don't wear a mask, you need a mask, but you need a shot, the shot don't work, you need a new shot, but the shot doesn't work. Right, we don't have science today. Uh-huh. Back in the night, you know, when he was doing this early 1900s, it was legit science. Now it's trash science.
I love that. Wow. I just honestly, Elliot, what my problem is, because I hear what you say, that we can't trust the meat industry anymore. You know, I have literally researched this, and even in organic, so-called organic farms that we trust, because they tell us these stories, the food that these animals get is compromised. And then we're eating that. And that is an issue I have more so than like, you know, eating meat or not. I don't know what I'm putting in my body anymore. So now I'm like, you know, being like thinking about being self-sufficient, having my own cows, my own chickens. Like that's the only way I can control what is actually happening and what I'm putting in my body. It's crazy out there, you know? So that's kind of like where I'm conflicted with going to the supermarket right now. And getting organic meat, for instance.
Yeah.
It's problematic.
Yeah, I can understand why. Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you...
And in Europe, it's a lot harder even. Like here, like I'm surrounded by cattle. And all of my neighbors have, they do farmers markets. So like I could literally be looking at the cow that I'm going to be eating in a couple weeks. Because we go to the farmers markets. Yeah. And get from the, you know, we do our best, right? Again. Like, you don't know unless you're raising it yourself, but we do our best to get what we can, you know, to get the healthiest food that we can.
I love that. Yeah. No, but that is the way. But, you know, for a lot of people listening, it's like, you know, we talk about organic meat these days, but you really don't know. And that's a big problem. No. I'm going to South America again, Colombia to be specific. I'm flying out tomorrow, actually. And I'm going to do an ayahuasca ceremony for the first time. I've been listening to Mike Tyson on a Hot Boxing podcast, and he's talking about the toad experience, and even Tony Robbins did an experience like that. And I was wondering, like, what does Elliot think about this? Like, I've been researching a lot about it, of course. Like, I've been like trying to do this for years, but I feel that if I'm going to do it, I need to do it where it's coming from. The plants there, the ceremony there, the shaman, everything, like where it's rooted, and not just a ceremony here in Europe, which is not the, the grounds and the spiritual leverage that it has. So Ellie, what do you think about that? Like, what is your perspective on ayahuasca ceremonies and the toad and all that?
I don't know. I'm not interested. I'm not interested in it. I have a tendency to think that the people that go to these ceremonies are chasing a high, like most people do, or some sort of entertainment, something new. I'm going to have an experience, right? That's what everybody wants. Nobody's settled with themselves in their lives. They want fun, right? And it may be wrapped in this spiritual garment of, yes, it's fun, but I'm going to be expanding my mind. Well, yeah, I mean, so LSD, mushrooms, ayahuasca, to me, again, just my opinion,
yeah,
is that it's just another high that people are chasing.
So the difference with this is, though, like, it's actually, you come there for healing. And I think, honestly, everybody carries a certain amount of baggage or trauma from the past, even consciously or unconsciously, we just carry that. And I believe that through research, that ayahuasca can really connect with the spiritual world. And of course, this is a little bit conflicted because, you know, we're both Christian, and, like, you know, the Bible is very specific about, like, you know, doing these kinds of things. I just feel that this is something where if I listen to the people that have experienced it, that are, you know, from being an addict to being completely sober, from Mike Tyson, who is this vicious fighter, to now being the most humble being. And he's like, it's all about love. And if you hear him speak now, he has become a very grounded, loving individual. And he goes on about, like, I'm like, what the like, I hate the person who I was. I was angry. I was ego. He said he never saw those things before. And the same with Tony Robbins, like a lot of other successful people have been doing it. And I think that's kind of like where, you know, you can't go around that. These people really have experienced this, changed their life for the better. So that's kind of like why I'm like,
yeah, I don't know. Mike Tyson's also old right now, mm-hmm. right? Like, testosterone drops and your mind changes. He lost a daughter. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of his new wisdom and insights comes with experience, right? He was 23 years old when he was smashing people's faces in and fornicating with 50 girls a week. Hey, he's 23. Now he's damn near 60. So of course it's, oh, love and be calm and be humble. Yeah, because you had life experience. You lost one of your daughters. You realize as an older man where you fucked up when you were young, and now you change your ways. I can do the same thing. I'm 42 years old. I look at 22-year-old Elliot. I'm like, yeah, I was retarded. I was making all kinds of dumb mistakes. Now, is it because I took some special medicine? I don't know. I mean, I did smoke weed for a while, but it doesn't take much to see that when you mature, you grow up, you look back and you say, oh, I was wrong. That was a former me. I'm a little bit more wiser. I'm calmer, more sedate, not as fiery. Now I can make judgments about, you know, the younger me and say that it was because I took this medicine.
I love that. No, I hear you, man. And I'm a person who meditates 20 minutes every day with my partner, actually. Even if we're in separate countries, we always go on FaceTime and we do like a meditation together. And I think it helped me like ground more. And I think like naturally you can reach to even with wisdom, but also growing older, like you say, I think you can reach certain levels of like what you just explained, maturity, if you will. And it's like, again, I'm going to document it, and I'm really, I'll let you know I'm going to be honest, like, I'm going to let you know how it was. And if it was indeed life-changing, and if I do have different perspectives of it, but I'm highly interested. So I, you know, I'm glad that you were able to, you know, share your perspective, because I was like, I'm really going to ask him this question. I'm like curious to know. And then like my following up question is like, I read my own comments in my Instagram, my YouTube, everywhere. And I see a lot of people are fucked up, like lost and confused, man. Like, I need help, losing their jobs. And I think more than ever, with this whole pandemic and everything going on, people are confused. Do you see the same kind of thing happening in you know, people joining your program and young men signing up?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you're saying there. Mm-hmm. And the confusion is getting even more diabolical and disoriented. It's getting crazier and crazier because we have no sense of self. Mm-hmm. We're not grounded in anything. And our ancestors were grounded in many things, including, you know, the way they live their lifestyles with the earth, but they were grounded in community, right? There's no community anymore. Europe is not a community. You know, listen, I know it's going to sound strange for a guy like me to say that I'm not the biggest fan of all this integration, like all these cultures coming together, like the Tower of Babel. We're supposed to get along, but we don't have the same values. We don't have the same mindsets. We don't have the same history. We don't know each other. We are not cohesive. But when we lived more as, you know, segregated tribal associations, well, you knew yourself through your tribe. You knew that most of the people or all the people that were in your tribe or in your culture, let me even just put it that way, were of the same mindset, of the same language, of the same religion. That's the other one, religion. There was a time when we all bonded together and knew ourselves through a religion or a mythology, right? Today, the secularization of the world has, and postmodernism has destroyed culture. There's no more culture. You in Europe, you guys, you got more. I go to London and I see more Muslims than white people. I'm like, oh, where am I? Am I in Dubai or am I in London? And the same thing everywhere. There's a book by E. Michael Jones. I can't remember the name of his book, but he talks about how in America, the experiment of moving, of integration was designed, like its whole design, the idea behind it, the purpose behind it, was to destroy culture. Because if you integrate people like that, they lose themselves. Everybody loses themselves. And so if we're living in a world where we're confused, right? We have no culture. We have no tribe. We have no unifying set of values or religion. And the nail in the coffin, the final attack, where we find ourselves struggling most is no family. Family does not even exist. So I'm talking big picture in terms of tribe and culture and that. But if we just, and you see that destroying, right? Open borders and shit everywhere. Then you boil it right down to it. Families don't work. There's no fathers. There's no mothers. The children are raised in daycare or they're raised by the public school system. It's even for me, it's a daily struggle between whether or not I'm the primary influence in my children's life or TikTok. You see? So if you're trying to make sense of, or anybody trying to get stable in this diabolically disoriented soup that we're swimming in, you're going to have a hard time. I think what's required is a form of detachment and acceptance, right? Like, I'm really not sure even. I don't know, but I agree with you that it is confusing as hell. Everybody is confused.
It's just like I observe these, the, you know, the narrative in the comments, and it's like, it's hard, man. Like I'm somebody that sometimes gives in, you know, they're talking about like how they lost their home or their, you know, everything that they had. And I'm like, you know, I have it okay. I can, you know, miss something. And like, I don't know, like I hear you when you talk about detachment, but I'm also an empath. I know myself, right? And that is a strength, but also a weakness I have. Like, I feel really hard, bro. Like, I feel hard. And like, I'm not a sim by any means, but I do feel. And I think that is something that I have to detach myself a lot of times from. especially when, you know, you're a public figure and you get a lot of, you know, things thrown at you, people with emotions and problems. And, you know, I can't save the world. I can't do all, like I said, right? Like the family, and you explain about it, that is really our center of control, right? Our own family structure. And that's why, like, right now I'm looking in Spain for property, man. I'm living in a city. I lived in New York. Like, I'm tired of all travel. Like, you see my Instagram, I'm all over the place. Right now I'm buying another property in Spain. I have a bunch of land, kind of like doing the same thing as you, and just wind down and just kind of like detach myself a lot more and be less impacted by what's happening around me. Because if you look at what's happening right in the world, you get depressed as fuck.
Yeah. You know who's not depressed? You know who's not sick? You know who's not getting COVID? The Amish. Why is there no COVID in the Amish? They're in America. They're in the middle of America. They're in Pennsylvania for the most part.
The Amish, yeah.
They don't have these problems. Yeah. You know why they don't have these problems? They don't have any screens. They're not looking at what other people are doing. They have no idea what's going on in Afghanistan. They have no idea what's going on in Louisiana. Dan Kennedy says that weather is always local. That means, why am I worried about what's going on over there? Meanwhile, I have my own weather right here. That's a part of the problem. That's a part of a problem in this whole want to save the world mindset with the culture. The funniest thing, the craziest thing, is this misplaced maternal instinct that I see a lot of women have, where they want to save all the dogs, or they want to save all the animals, or these people want to save all the world. They want to save the whole world. But it's like, but look at your family. Look at your four walls. Look what's going on in your life. And they can't do it.
Yeah.
Come home. We each need to come home and take care of our own place. It's not that I don't care about the people out there, but this is first. This is where I put my attention. If I can make an effect out there, if I can make a change out there, if something that I say evolves somebody's way of thinking and helps them out, that's great. But that's a bonus.
Wow. Yeah. No, I love that. Are you, this is a deep one. Are you afraid to die?
No.
No?
No, I'm not afraid to die because I do every day what I can do to stay in a state of grace.
What happens when we die? What happens? Like, what is your perspective on like dying, and like, where do we go?
You call yourself a Christian, so you know that there is a judgment, right? That's one of the things that the secular postmodern world wants us to forget, that all of our actions, all of our deeds, all of our words, all of our thoughts will be brought to account. We're asked to bring ourselves to an account every day, but there will be a individual judgment, and there will be a collective judgment. When we die, we face our individual judgment. Right. Yeah, but the world hates that word judgment. So it's almost like I even cringe a little bit on the inside when I say it, because the world wants you to believe that everything's OK and that nothing that you do is bad. Right. That there's this my truth. Everything's objective. And like, it doesn't matter. Well, I don't think that's what's going to, I think we're going to discover when we die that that's not actually true and that we've been tricked. Satan loves to trick us into believing that our sins are good, right? Mm-hmm. This is the new one for the LGBT community. Love is love. Okay, but the way you're doing it completely defies natural law, right? Love is love doesn't mean, oh, well, I'm going to cut my penis off, pretend that I'm a girl, and then go date guys. Love is love. No, that's a mutilation of God's creation, and you're living like an abomination, right? It's weird. And so you'll have to confront that, right? You're not going to get out of here without confronting that, right? And I don't know what God's going to do, because there's death, judgment, heaven, and hell. But I don't know who's going to go where. I can't say that. Only God can say that. God could look at that person and say, what was this? What was that all about? What were you doing there? And if that person recognized, like, you know what, I had a tough childhood, I was molested, and my parents, and, you know, at some point in their life, if they come around to it and they can repent, then God will say, God will recognize, look, I understand. God knows that we're living in a soup of sin. He knows that it's not easy here, right? All the angels are watching us, rooting for us, but we're so easily led astray by the temptations in this world, the shiny objects in this world, the lies of this world, deceptions. So what's going to happen when we die? I'm prepared to be judged. There are things I've done and said that weren't right. There are things that I probably need to still repent on. I have hangups. I have things that I need to still let go of. And I'm going to be forced. I'm going to be forced to take a look at those. God's going to force me and remind me of who I was and what I did, and then ask, why weren't you the perfect being that you know you could be? Right? Where did you lose that sense of grace? Right?
Yeah.
And then after that, look, there's depictions of heaven and hell, right? I don't know if that's true or not, but there's eternal torment, which is for true. I do believe there's eternal torment, because if we leave our bodies, our soul stays in the state that we die in. If you die miserable and depressed and angry, that's it. Game over. Your soul goes on in that miserable, angry, depressed state. If your last breath is a breath of peace, of forgiveness, of anticipation, joy, that's it, I'm gone, then that's what's going to go with you. That's your fate. That's eternity for you, right? Even if you screwed up, I'm sure that the state of your soul is affected by how you die.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. And I think there's definitely going to be, as you know, especially as a Christian, like the judgment day, as we call it. It's just that I wonder, like, you know, I've been in the military. I have had friends of mine that are close that have passed away at, you know, at like my age. And I'm like, where are they? You know, like what kind of like, what, like, is it energy? Is it light? Like it's fascinating to think about. But I think also, the idea that if you're a good human being, and of course we're not perfect, but we know when the judgment day comes, we stand tall, that we will be at the right place, whatever that's going to be. Like if there's a spiritual being, if we're conscious, if we're light, whatever that is. But I do wonder, you know, especially if we see people pass around, like I always like ask myself these questions. Another thing, like what we see happening, and this was a topic that was actually coming from the members only community. We see a lot of single moms right now. There's a lot of single moms listening as well. And like, obviously with, you know, the state of the society that we're in, and people are getting divorced very quickly and rapidly, like they don't want to work on their relationship anymore, the marriage. And then when single guys get in a dating scene, you know, they can meet single moms. What is your perspective on that? And do you think that it is long-term something that can be sustainable?
I don't think it's a good idea. I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't advise somebody to do it. You know, it's funny because women have all these standards for men, right? Sometimes ridiculous standards. That's why there's so many incels today, right? Mm-hmm. She's got to be over 6 foot tall. You got to make six figures, so on and so forth. But it seems like men have zero standards for women. You know, very little standards. Let me put it that way. Very, very little standards for women. And I don't know why it is or what that's about. Maybe it's because, whatever. I have some ideas that maybe we can get into. But if I'm an ex-convict, right? I've spent time in jail, right? And I'm now in the dating market, right? Let's say I spent, you know, 5 years in jail for something. And now I go into the dating market and say, I have to bring that up. I have to bring that up at some point, right? Just like the single mom has to bring it up at some point. You gotta bring it up at some point, no matter who I am or what the situation is or who she is that's trying to be with me, that's a red flag. That's a red flag. You gotta ask yourself, and that person, even if you're dating them for a few weeks or a few months or whatever these people do, before that comes up, that person has to pause and say, wait a second. Okay, this guy seems good. He seems right. He's doing the right thing. You know, I like him a lot, but he spent 5 years in state penitentiary. What did he do? Did he make some bad decisions? Right? Did he make some bad decisions? And is that part of him that created that bad decision still there, right? Like, maybe I'm a great guy, but if somebody pisses me off, I go nuts, right? That's a latent trait that you might not see for years. But the fact that I spent years in jail, 5 years in jail, should tell you there's something inside that guy. There's some way that guy thinks. There's something about that guy that's not 100%. I need to be leery. I need to be cautious, very cautious about. When a woman has a baby out of wedlock and or is divorced, right? Meaning she was either just being promiscuous and fornicating, or she couldn't figure out, and her husband, right, couldn't figure out how to be together. To me, that's a red flag. And the consequence of it, in the same way that is, you know, 5 years of prison time, is even deeper than 5 years of prison time. It's a lifetime of caring for this child that no longer has a father. I'm not so sure I want to step in to that role of being this child's father to a mother who makes bad decisions, right? Again, I don't know what happened. You can ask me about why I was in prison, and I could tell you all the reasons why I was a victim, why I was in prison. These women, men want to believe women because women like to be victims, and men like women are victims, right? Because it helps us feel like we're going to save them, right? White knight syndrome, they call it. I'm going to save her. She came from a bad relationship. And the husband, and it's always the guy's fault. If you ever date a single woman and she takes responsibility for why the relationship didn't work, you found a unicorn. It's always he was abusive. Always. I tend not to take that so easily. What do you mean abusive? Because if you dig a little deeper, there's no abuse. There was, y'all couldn't figure each other out. You couldn't be the kind of woman that he needed, and he couldn't be the kind of man that you needed. What makes me think that I could step in and all of a sudden I'm going to be the kind of man and you're going to be the kind of woman that we can get together? To me, it's just a giant red flag. Now, does that mean that the guy that went to prison can't come out and change his ways and get a new start on life? No, that's not true at all. Maybe, but I still got to be careful. Does that mean that she can't, you know, she made a mistake when she was young, right? People make mistakes. That means she can't turn it around and be a good person to be with? No, that's not the case at all. But I'm going to have a little ear open, keep one eye open, right? I'm not going to be so relaxed with this person.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I don't know if I want to take that responsibility on, right? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why when they're, see, when you have an abundance mentality, you recognize that there are millions of women. Why this one? Why would I take this one with a strike against her and a red flag in her back pocket when all I got to do is go over here? There's another woman that doesn't have a baby.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And like we all like did some bad shit in the past where we made mistakes, right? And I think a mistake or even not, like, you know, if it ends up in a divorce or whatever, like, I kind of always want to get to know the person. I want to get to know whoever I'm dealing with, right? I don't want to judge your past. I want to get to know, who are you now? Because if I, like, of course, like you say, right, you're going to keep an eye open. But don't you already do that? You know, like, at the end of the day, all you know is now. Who is this person now?
That's right? Not true, though. That's not true. I don't know just now. I know the past in this moment, too, because you have this 6-year-old brat that I have to now deal with. You say some other man's child is now in my face all day long. Right. So why would I want to take that? Sure. Sure. You made a mistake in the past. But now I'm going to step up and play daddy with this kid that doesn't belong to me by a man that imprinted you with his seed and his energy. Right. This is another reason why I don't believe it. I think fornication is a bad idea. I think we had the conversation before, but sex out of wedlock is a dumb idea, because now you're taking on not only a woman who has been run through. Right. And the more sexual partners a woman has, the less likely is her ability to pair bond. Science has shown this. See, her ability to pair bond goes down. So not only have you lost your ability to pair bond, possibly. Right. But now I have to live my life with your consequence, this child. The guy, that's why I said it's worse than the guy that went to jail. It's like, yo, he went to jail 5 years and I say he's out. It's not going to affect your life at all, really. You know, maybe it can, but not like, you're not going to be looking at it every day and having to feed it and take care of it. And now the laws are so against men in the marriage department that he could end up taking care of that other man's child in his home with this girl that he saved. And if things don't work out with them, she could still get child support from him for some other guy's kid. Yeah, it's happened. There's all kinds of cases of this.
Wow. Well, that's a whole nother story, you know, because I do feel that the ex husband, dad, needs to take his responsibility and still take care of his daughter or son, you know, like that's just reasonably.
Well, what if the mother is like, you can't see your son anymore, and they take him away? It happens a lot of times.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what they do too. I spoke about this the other day in a YouTube video. One of the worst things that parents do, single parents do, both male and female, is both. Mm-hmm. They denigrate the other parent when they're not around. So this child, I see so many young boys like this. This is where the young men really, really suffer. Mm-hmm. Not only is their dad not there, but their mother plant the seed of anger in their hearts towards their dad. So you know what ended up happening to those young men? Just by byproduct of them being raised by a woman that hates their father, these young men grow up to hate themselves. They grow up to hate men. They can't trust masculine authority. They see masculinity, and this is where the word toxic comes from, because they don't understand it. All they see is, my dad was a bad man. Most of them, and when I ask them, like, how do you know your dad was a bad man? Did you ever talk to him? Did you ever ask him what happened? Did you ask him why you guys haven't been together? No. Well, how do you know? My mom told me. If you have your mother's conception of your father, you don't have the mind of a normal man. You have the mind of your mother. Mm-hmm.
That's deep, man. That's deep. Do you also think that we as men in this day in society, we are two one behind, like on a scoreboard? Like we are, like if we set boundaries, it often is displayed as abuse or like you said, toxic masculinity. Like I feel now what we see, this trend of like, watch out what you say, you know, watch out what you stand for, you know, because you might just be categorized as abusive or toxic.
Right. Both of which are made up. They're both made up. Most abuse is not abuse. When I ask these people, I dig it a little bit deeper. The abuse was like, oh, he yelled at me. Mm-hmm. There's more abuse going the other way around, because women know that most women believe that if they smack a man, hit a man, that he won't hit back. And most men generally will not. Right. Regardless of what Lifetime movies tell you on cable TV or whatever, you know, sob story somebody tells you, that's not necessarily the case. So I don't remember what I was going to say about that, but I don't remember.
Yeah, no, you were elaborating on, like, you know, how easily the word abuse is thrown, and that you speak to men that and like I assume women that. Where when you speak to them, like, it's like, wait, just because he yelled at you, it's abuse, or the other way around, you know, like we're so quick to judge.
Right.
We're so quick to throw that label.
Right. Oh.
And yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So I think I hear you saying, like, it ends up having guys walking on eggshells. We're walking on eggshells. Even in the dating market, men are, this movement of MGTOW is spreading. It's growing. Men are less and less wanting to deal with women because a woman is believed before a man is, right? If she says he raped me, mm-hmm. he has no proof. He's like, well, we were just here and nothing. He's automatically convicted. So what these guys are doing is they're just not going out with women. They're just not dealing with women. They just refuse to.
I know for a fact, Elliot, this podcast we did, it's deep. And it's going to spark a lot of conversation, which, again, I think is good, because let me tell you, 74% of the listeners here are women. And I'm sure, like, you guys all have a perspective. We'd love to know, you know, I whether you differ or like please share those opinions, of course. Like, one thing here is central. Women are beautiful. Women are respected and loved. And I think as men, we want to be protectors. We want to be the best man we can be. We want to provide. We have this natural instinct. And I think right now, what you're also describing is walking on eggshells and being afraid, being fearful all the time, like makes us not being able to fulfill our role as a father, as a husband.
Right.
So what does it create? And that's what you stand up for.
It creates a lack of trust in masculinity. It's a confusion about what masculinity is, right? And it is also a denigration of masculinity, because anything that which is of authority is masculine. Masculinity is authority. Yeah. And like I said before, the world hates authority, right? Anything that sounds like hierarchy, which is uniquely masculine. Women are egalitarian by their nature, which is okay. They should be that way, but men are hierarchical by nature. Because we live in such an effeminate, femwashed world where feminism rules, and we live in a matriarchy, not a patriarchy, though they claim otherwise, we live by and we're taught egalitarian principles. And even as men who would stand up and be alpha male leaders, good, strong providers and protectors, we can't do it because we've been taught that that's not right. You need to be democratic.
No.
It's not true. That's against masculine nature. So when you ask a man to be a man in a world that's against men, they're confused. They have no idea. What do you mean, be a man? All those are the things that I was told not to do or not to say or not to be, but you want me to be a man? And when they say be a man, it's usually coming from a matriarchal or a gynocentric idea of what a woman wants a man to be. A woman's conception of a man is not the true conception of a man, but men try to be men based on what women say they should be. But imagine this, the tables turn and men said what women should be with regard to women. We would ask women to go back to their natural feminine beauty, which is be wives, be baby makers, right? If you say be a wife and a mother, today that sounds like misogyny, right? Men can't be men because that's toxic, right? And women can't be women because everything's so backwards and they have to act more like men. What's wrong with my wife is the happiest woman on the face of this earth. I'll tell you that for sure. She is a mother to four children and she stays home and raises them. She don't have any masculine pretensions. Like she's going to go out there and save the world or climb the corporate ladder. That's a man's job. That's my job. She has no interest in that. But the world teaches women that that's what they want. That's what they should do. And that teaches men that, oh, you need to change diapers and you need to give the baby food. So it's literally, it's a topsy-turvy. We live in a topsy-turvy world. Everything's backwards. And if you say otherwise, then you're a bad guy.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be a bad guy. Like you talk about eggshells and stuff. I won't walk on eggshells because I have nothing that people have for me. I don't really care anymore. I have a beautiful wife that we've been together since we were 14 years old.
That is rare, man. That is beautiful. Yeah.
30 years old. 30 years.
Yeah.
I got four children, three daughters.
Beautiful.
People like to say that I don't like women, but I have three daughters. Do you think I hate women? How could I possibly hate women? I'm surrounded by them. And these are well-adjusted, beautiful, amazing women. But I don't have the same mindset of this fallen world, which is to turn my daughters into men. My greatest desire for my daughters is that they find a good husband like their dad and make babies, make lots of babies. I can't wait to be a grandfather. But again, that sounds backwards in a backwards world. I should be hoping my daughters will, you know, go to Wall Street and compete with the guys on Wall Street floor, or go be a lawyer and argue with men in the court. Like, why? They lose their femininity, and when they act that way, they're nothing but inferior men. You'll never be a man. Why? There's certain things that men could do, women can't do. You could do it, but you're not gonna be very good at it. Not as good at it. And there's certain things that women could do, men can't do. Men absolutely cannot do it. Why not honor our natural roles? Why not honor our natural gifts and states? Why compete with each other and brother line? Well, we live in a diabolically disoriented time. Everything's backwards.
Yeah. Wow. Man, this is deep. This, but we're way over time, by the way. So, like, is there any thought that you wanna close with? I wanna give the podium to you because you've been really opening up, this time and every time, to be honest. But we went like from death to the world, perception, politics, self-sufficient. We started, I think, with meat, veganism. So, is there anything you want to close off with, a message? And of course, I'm going to invite everyone to follow and leave the comments on our socials, YouTube, your perspectives. We'd love to read it. It's at Elliot Holz, I believe, also for YouTube, right? I'll also put it in the description. But take it away, man, if there's anything you want to say.
I'm just following your lead, man. Like, whatever you throw at me, I'll pick up. Wow. I'm on your show.
That's rare these
whatever
ways.
Whatever you want to hear, I'll talk about.
I love that. Huh? I love that. That's rare. I think that's, I want to thank you so much, man, for coming on again. I really appreciate your time and I look forward to seeing you again at some point and reconnect, but all my blessings. I'll let you know how it goes in Spain with my land. Yeah. That I'm looking into, but mm-hmm. You definitely inspired me to be self-sufficient. So thank you for that.
Good, man. Yep. Life is great.
Thank you so much, man. Have a great day.
All right, Jesse. Be well, bud.
See you next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to Life Talk with Jesse Meester. Thanks for listening to the show. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. And if you want to be the next guest, please apply by filling in the contact form on jessemeester.com or DM Meester Store on Instagram. Till next time, keep sharing love and life.